I shouldn't have left her.
Don't worry about it, big man. I'm sure she got out of here before it happened. Or, as the good reverend would say, why we on this particular mission, we'll never know. But I do know here today that the Black Knights will emerge victorious once again.
Amen, man.
Amen, Reverend.
Kind of a downer, isn't it?
Luckily, that worked out.
Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory and a presentation of Prismatic Tsunami. My name is Eric. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the show. I want to welcome you to the program. If you've never been here before, every week-ish, we get together and we talk about some of our favorite movies. A lot of geek movies and cult classics, things that we enjoy discussing on an everyday basis, we decided to torment you with. So feel free to drop us a line if you want to be part of the show in any way, have a recommendation, would like us to read your email on the air, tell us how great we are. Feedback at prismatictsunami.com is the best way to do it. Going to go ahead and introduce the panel to my, I always say left, but in this case, we're live in the studio for the first time on this show ever across from me. He picked a hell of a day to quit drinking. It's Richard.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
I thought that was apropos.
Right. But people need to quit messing with my satellites. That's all I got to say.
That's fair. You're damned right. She punched the president. It's Vanessa.
And I'd do it again.
Well said. He can't even count the number of schmucks still trying to get into Washington. Jason?
Oops. No oops. That-a-way.
That-a-way. And he, too, may have inadvertently triggered an interstellar war. It's the kid.
You know, I cannot count the number of times.
Yeah, welcome back. We missed you last week.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah,
I mean that in many ways.
Well, it was not the same. It was a fraction of the length. No. It wasn't as animated.
It was 80% of the...
Oh, yeah. I took out my 10 things that I say every episode.
And they are important 10 things. Don't sell yourself short, my friend.
To be fair, he usually clips them all out anyway. You never make it to the final cut.
I've listened. I do listen to the podcast.
I wanted to pull up a theme.
People listen to the podcast?
And start with that again, like, you know, the musical themes, because that's I've been doing that a lot lately. And it's like, you know, it didn't really matter that much. But I do love the music in this movie. Independence Day. It is... Currently, while we are in the studio recording this, the 4th of July, so it seemed like the truly appropriate choice for this week on its 25th anniversary in the theaters. I'm so sorry to make everybody feel old.
That made me feel old, and I'm the young one in the
right?
room.
Came out July 3rd, 1996. Went to number one at the box office, right off the top with $50.2 million. The closest thing after that, in the which I don't have the list in front of me now, but... was like $17 million. I mean, it just swept the box office, pounded it. Rated PG-13, ran 2 hours and 25 minutes. So it's a freaking long movie, which is something because it doesn't feel to me like a stupid long movie. I mean, it's got a lot going on.
Oh, it was a stupid long movie.
Do you think? Oh, okay.
Oh, stupid long.
Oh, my goodness, so long.
The aliens are coming and their goal is to invade and destroy Earth. Fighting superior technology, mankind's best weapon is the will to survive.
Succeed and help everyone.
Yeah, not so much, yeah.
They're lying. The best weapon is Will Smith.
I think this movie definitely has the highest body count of any we've seen so far.
You think so? I would say, at least esoterically, that's probably true. I mean, as far as on screen?
Yeah, most of it happens
Starship
off
Troopers.
Off
Starship close. Troopers comes to mind.
Oh, I forgot about that one, too.
And Boondock Saints. No,
millions.
It has a lot of...
Millions of people died in this movie.
Yeah, but you didn't actually get to see it. You just saw the buildings going boom, 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 boom.
But you knew those buildings were full of millions of people.
Buildings blew up, cars flying everywhere. I want to know the cars budget for this movie.
And it was all practical effects almost. I mean...
Until you get to the planes, yeah.
Everything except the planes. Oh, gosh, Jason.
Sorry, that was bad.
Everything except the planes. You were talking about, we're all live on mics in the same room for a change. It's like, do that again, sir. I dare you. The planes, almost everything you saw in the air except for, was it one shot? I can't remember. But almost everything was digitally added.
And the crop you could duster. Tell.
Yeah. But the rest? Yeah, I think it was a crop duster, yeah.
I can see that.
But the rest, all the car stuff, like cars flying into cars and stuff, they literally took cars with cranes and threw them at other cars with explosives in them.
That sounds terrifying.
Oh, it was amazing.
How do I get that job?
Right? You become director Roland Emmerich. We talked about him recently. This is the guy, he and Dean Devlin, his co-production guy, writer Dean Devlin, did this and Universal Soldier and Stargate and the Godzilla that came out a few years after this.
I loved.
Yeah. So, you know. This is interesting because Stargate was just a couple years before this, and we just watched Stargate, and we talked a lot about it, and there was some mixed kind of baggage with Stargate. But overall, I think we had a fairly good discussion about that.
I would agree.
Independence Day felt like it was a huge step forward for Roland Emmerich in terms of the quality of the production he was putting together, the details, obviously the budget.
The budget. That's the only thing that improved.
Oh, you say that, but you have to know what to do with that money. You gotta
hire
know.
More talent.
If he had the money that he had for ID4 for Stargate, Stargate would have not been anywhere near what it was. I think he had the ability regardless. It was just the fact that he didn't have the budget to see through it.
Even then, this movie was only, the budget was only $75 million. So even for the time, I mean, that was big. But considering what it took in, I mean, the success of the movie was, well, we'll get into it. It's ridiculous. Music by David Arnold, who did Stargate, Independence Day, a bunch of James Bond stuff. He got his start with Roland Emmerich with Stargate. That was kind of like his first big film. And so he kept him for this one as well. And the music's great. It's fine. It's good. It does the job.
I appreciated the music.
There's places where I like the themes, the real thematic stuff. There's places where it's a little bit too much lip service to what's going on. The marches and stuff with like the military sound. It's like every time we get to a scene where something military is like, you know, it just is what it is. It's fine.
I mean, that's in a military scene in any movie.
Yeah, but that's what I'd like to see, a little more creativity there. You know?
Fair enough.
There's a submarine on the screen.
I did appreciate, there's a sequence towards the end when they're doing the whole around the world thing, the montage where everybody's attacking and stuff. And they go to like when they're doing the Morse code deal, you know. What's the term?
Morse code.
No, the things, the telegraph.
Telegraph.
Thank you. When they're doing the telegraph, telegraph stuff, they would switch to like a different scene and the music would take on a character of the culture. Like went to the Brits and you could hear kind of a little bit of that British theme in there a little bit. It went to like Moscow or something. You could hear kind of a Russian grandeur in the
Tetris
background.
Theme.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, a little bit. Starring Mr. Will Smith as Captain Stephen Hiller. This was early.
I was going to say, was it starring Will Smith or was it featuring Will Smith? Because I think this was this was a little bit before Will Smith was a starring Will Smith type of
most
actor.
Of us only really knew Will from like Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
Well, most people really only knew him for the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. But, I mean, he'd had his burgeoning music career already started, but then he'd done some TV stuff. And it wasn't his first movie, Bad Boys, came out a year before this.
Okay.
And the Men in Black was a couple years after this. So, I mean, it was really right at his rise.
Yeah, this was definitely one of the lower rungs on the ladder for him.
Wait, his name was Stephen?
Captain Steve Hiller? Yeah.
Stephen Hiller.
Yeah.
Steve!
He was called
Hiller more than he was called Steve.
Yeah,
Captain Hiller.
The only person that called him Steve was Jeff Goldblum.
Maybe. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure his wife would have called him that.
I don't remember.
I don't remember her calling him anything.
She was only his girlfriend, actually.
Well, baby and stuff.
Yeah, oh, but he was proposing to her. That was part of the thing that happened in the movie.
And they got married.
Right. Well, but when
spoilers.
this came out, no, spoilers. Dude.
Sorry.
Don't
That's
spoil the movie.
Podcast.
We're so sorry.
Should we have put a spoiler alert on the beginning of this?
No. The Will Smith, we didn't really know. I mean, so I remember when this movie came out, it felt like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Cool.
I remembered it being weird when I was a kid because Will Smith wasn't there in my head yet.
I remember what I liked about it was it felt like a choice that was made because that had nothing to necessarily – it didn't have to be like a black man in that role, for example. It was a choice that was made because they liked him for the character or something, and that's what it seemed like appropriate. And I liked that you know, the role that he played in kind of the way the movie – the tone of the movie at that point. And this was the mid-90s, so there was a lot of kind of question in my head about that during that period, you know, where they were going with stuff like that, getting more diversity in mainstream casting and things. But, you know, it's different when you have a character who is very definitively written as a person of color. And then that's, you know, you more often than not in Hollywood, you end up with a white person playing them. But, you know, when it is and you feel like that's the casting because that's what they were looking for, and that may not have been the case here. I found it interesting because we were doing this movie this weekend and it just happened to be the 25th anniversary. There were some articles that were published in the last couple of days online. And one of them talked about the fact that Emmerich and Devlin had an interview recently with The Hollywood Reporter that 20th Century Fox initially refused to cast Will Smith, explaining that casting a black man in the lead, which they called the lead, Hiller's character, but it obviously a lead in the movie, would kill the foreign box office. You know, that was their concern at the time. There was so much racial bias in the international box office. They were like, it's going to tank the movie. Once they locked in Goldblum, though, they were absolutely convinced that Smith was right for the role, and they threatened to take the movie to Universal. If they didn't, because Universal's already calling at the time. It's like, we'll take this movie if 20th Century Fox don't want it. You know, it's like, and Emmerich was like, I don't think we really could have done it. Yeah, it wouldn't have been financially feasible at that point, but it was a good threat. So they really wanted Will Smith for the role.
Cool.
And I found it interesting because they said it that way in the interview. It's like, once we had Jeff Goldblum in, we knew we had to have Will Smith. And I'm sitting here thinking, the characters actually only interacted for a little bit in the last act. I mean, it was an important interaction, important engagement, but the movie didn't ride on it, so it seemed like an interesting choice to me.
Yeah, even during the entire movie, there are two different character plays when the movie switches between the scenes. You get that juxtaposition of their character personalities, and then when they come together, it gets that meshing.
That makes sense.
So it builds into the storyline.
Were you going to say, but kind of similar?
Almost exactly the same thing. Yeah, just the fact that in the first act of the movie, it's like Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, bouncy, 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 that's bouncy,
true.
Bouncy.
That's true.
And you got that balance, whereas if it had been two Jeff Goldblum-type characters or two Will Smith-type characters, it would have been
It did set a cool tone. And I really liked Goldblum's role in this movie a lot.
This might be my favorite Goldblum role.
I think it is.
It's
mine.
It's solid. I feel like David felt real. You know, I always liked Malcolm in Jurassic Park because he had a great character to him,
but he never felt real.
But it wasn't as genuine feeling.
Oh yeah, right? he did not exist in real life.
And part of that is you can tell because you know we've seen so much more of Jeff Goldblum in more recent years, and even the show that he has on Disney Plus that's Jeff like just what is it? The World According to
Jeff Goldblum.
So good.
One of the best things on Disney Plus. If you haven't seen it, please, please watch it. We need season two.
I don't think I've watched all the episodes in season one. I know I watched the ice cream one, the tattoo one, the sneakers, which I think was
I
the
apparently
first one.
Need to watch this. Oh,
I've watched it three times.
It's fun. It's fun, and he's such a character. I mean, in real life, but that's really him. As I guess what I'm saying, David wasn't necessarily Jeff Goldblum. But there was so much of his genuine, personality in his performance that it came across very powerfully, and I think added a lot to that mix, that chemistry.
It didn't seem like a believable character to me. I did not like his character.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and you know, do you like Goldblum in general? I mean,
that's a great question.
After you watch The World According to Jeff Goldblum, at least one episode of it, you'll go, oh,
and I'm trying to remember.
That is believable.
Where's the first place we really knew him? Probably like The Fly.
The Fly.
Right?
Never seen it.
Well, yeah.
Ooh.
Well, I'm not fast enough, am I? Jason's going to do it all for me. But you're on the other hand, you know, you're not missing anything important. It was a landmark of sorts for the movie that what it was at the time. It was kind of a big deal, and he was really intense in it. But I don't need to have seen The Fly in my life for it to be complete. By
fair enough.
I mean, I've never seen the original.
Was he in Powder, or was
yes.
that before?
I yeah, Powder seen that was. Either.
That's where I knew him from.
Powder was the year after this.
Oh, really?
Jason, just why don't you just wave at me? Or I guess just keep doing the kazoo.
Because it's so much more fun just to do it.
Buy a kazoo.
I don't buy anything.
Oh, good point. Sorry, I forgot who I was talking to. Jurassic Park was the year before this. No.
I have seen Jurassic Park. No, it's been a long
right.
time.
Jurassic Park was in 93. Powder was in 95. This was in 96. So, yeah, Powder was before this. But he'd been doing stuff at the time. We were seeing him and stuff. It just wasn't. Yeah, at this point, whenever I saw Jeff Goldblum, I just thought, wow, he's always going to act the same, isn't he? You know, just that's his delivery. It's Goldblum. Loved him in Thor Ragnarok. Bill Pullman, President Thomas J. Whitmore.
I forgot he was in here.
I will never forget. Because when I saw this movie, I knew him from exactly one place.
Spaceballs.
Yep. and he was working at the time. He was in Wyatt Earp in 94. I didn't realize that was a couple years before this. That seems impossible, but he was, I think he was Ed Masterson in Wyatt Earp, which is the Kevin Costner 18-hour version of the Wyatt Earp story. And then there was Casper. Yeah, Casper came out in 95.
Yeah, I remember him from Casper. Well,
I thought you might. That's why I mentioned it. Just make sure that Vanessa had some, you know. foundation then for the conversation there.
It's okay. In this movie, the whole time I saw Bill Pullman, I'm like, wasn't he president in something else? Oh, yeah, the sequel to this movie.
Oh, no. Let's not talk about that. we're going to have to talk about that a little bit at least. Those three, though, were pretty much the main, you know, when you talk about the switching between characters, most of it had to do with them.
Yep.
President Whitmore, Captain Hiller, David Levinson. Those are the three characters that really were carrying the narrative. Everybody else that was attached to them. But the part of the brilliance in this movie was the casting, because so many of the other characters, so many of the other actors that were involved were so well cast, in my opinion.
And you haven't even got to Randy Quaid yet.
No. He's kind of like,
that's who that was.
He's the fourth pillar.
Yeah.
He definitely is the fourth pillar in that dynamic.
Because you're talking about the switching back and forth between mm-hmm. the peoples. If you don't have Randy Quaid...
Randy Quaid played Russell Case. At this time, forgetting for a fact that my first exposure to Randy Quaid was in Vacation.
Me too.
At this time, I hadn't seen him in a lot. He did, I don't know if you guys have ever seen The Paper.
Nope.
Which was a couple years before this. It was a movie with Michael Keaton. I'll get that for you. The Paper was this beautifully rendered story that was really about the news being honest and accountable. And Glenn Close was in it, and Randy Quaid played a really great kind of just barely hanging on kind of reporter. He was like he did like opinion pieces and stuff a lot, and was targeted by people that he did opinions about that cost them.
Does, you know? Randy Quaid ever play anything that isn't barely hanging on?
Oh no, he's perfect. That's the casting.
That's his shtick. Okay.
Yeah. Now he's crazy, and I mean he was probably crazy then, but now he's the kind of crazy nobody wants to touch. So
fair
that's
enough.
Fair.
But he wasn't crazy.
He is now.
He wasn't. He was traumatized and PTSD'd and tormented and told he was a liar.
Are you talking about the character or the
actor?
Oh, okay.
We're talking about the actor.
Yes, we're talking about Randy Quaid. We're talking
for a
about
while,
Case.
We couldn't tell which way you
were
talking
about Russell Case. He wasn't crazy. He had been abducted by aliens.
And Mary McDonnell is going to come with some of the supporting roles here. Mary McDonnell played Marilyn Whitmore. I really like her in a lot of the stuff I've seen her in. She was in Sneakers a few years before this, which I know is one of Richard's favorite movies.
Oh, yeah, it is.
It's one we'll have to get on the show if we can find it on streaming. It's never on streaming, but so good. A little dated. So good. She was in Donnie Darko. I remember her mostly from Battlestar Galactica, from the newer version of that.
Oh, she was in Donnie Darko.
She was Laura Roslin in BSG. I guess she accepted this role immediately after her agent pitched the film by simply saying, it's about 15-mile-wide spaceships. I'm in. That was apparently the pitch.
Well, I mean, that would totally work on me.
It's like, wow. I looked her up because I thought we'd brought her up once before for something, and it was because you had mentioned, and may not have been on the show, but you had mentioned that there was a show called ER in the 80s.
Yeah.
And she was on that.
Yeah.
She was regular on that, and I mean, that would have been a little younger for her. And I had thought, for some reason, I think because the Laura Roslin role was more fresh in my mind, which was like late aughts, in my head, she was older than Bill Pullman, you know, who seemed like a younger choice, you know, compared to because they were married in this. And it turns out they're like a year apart. She's like a year older than he is. So, and they were both in their early 40s when they did this movie, which I thought was pretty good. Good casting choice. I liked her as a first lady. I thought it worked really well. Again, you know, wasn't vital to anything. Judd Hirsch was probably the only, you know, casting side, you know, support casting that was really vital. And he played
so good.
Julius Levinson. This is by far, I think, the role he is most known for in movies.
He's see that.
Done a ton of TV. And yeah. He was a main character, side character, supporting character in one of my favorite shows, Numbers, which was a procedural in the early...
Oh, I forgot about Numbers. No, late 2000s. I loved that show.
Yeah, and remember he was the dad.
Yeah.
And he was on... Did you guys ever see... Probably maybe not Forever. Did you see Forever?
Mm-mm.
Ian Gruffudd, the guy that played Mr. Fantastic in the first two Fantastic Four films.
I like him.
Yeah. He played it. He started a show in 2014 that was about like a guy who was immortal, who every time he died, he came back to life naked in the river nearby.
Apparently, I need to see this. It sounds interesting.
And at some point, like in World War II or something, he and the woman that he was with adopted a boy who was orphaned. And this was more modern day. And Judd Hirsch plays that boy, who's now much older than Ian, because Ian doesn't age. It was procedural because he was a Emmy, a medical examiner. So he worked with a cop, and you know, the cop was always suspicious about the weirdness, like, you know, all the stuff you can put into a script like that. It was a really good show. It only lasted one season and got axed, which it ended on a cliffhanger, so you know, pissed everybody off.
But, welcome to most of the shows that I like.
But I liked Judd Hirsch in that a lot too. So, there you go. Robert Loggia was doing the Robert Loggia thing. He played General William Gray. Was very likable in this. Dude's been acting since the 50s. I was looking at what he'd done around the time. Bad Girls was a couple years before this. Wild Palms was a year before that, which was a kind of a cyberpunky type of, not like deep core cyberpunk, like the aesthetic, but like the construct, you know, of it in fiction. Miniseries, TV miniseries that was really good. Had, I think, I want to say Jim Belushi in it. It was a weird casting, but good stuff. Mostly people remember him from Big, I think, because he was the store manager or the company owner.
Yeah.
President.
Playing the piano.
Yep, the piano scene. Yeah, so good. And that's everybody big. I mean, I've got a number of people here worth mentioning, of course.
I will always bring up Adam Baldwin.
Adam Baldwin, which baby Baldwin, man. Nobody, he looked so young. And he played Major Mitchell in this. Adam, Jason.
That's who that was. I knew he looked familiar. I couldn't place him.
He was Jane.
Jane.
Yeah.
Firefly.
The Baldwin who's not one of the Baldwins.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
The guy that shot at the Coke can.
Gotcha. Yep.
Got it.
He
okay.
doesn't look anything he like he does in Firefly.
One of my favorites.
No, well, you're a little older later.
A little bit, yeah.
I latched on to him when he was in My Bodyguard, which was like very young.
It was like 87 or something like that.
Yeah. So
I wasn't alive. I
forgot about that one. But he was in like Buffy, and he was in he was a villain in Buffy.
Yeah.
He was really intense in that. And he was in Firefly, and he was in, I loved him in Chuck. If you've ever watched Chuck. Such a good show. James Rebhorn played Albert Nibinsky, anyway, the Secretary of Defense, the sniveling guy that...
Oh,
the guy that got fired.
Nasty character.
And every time you see that actor in something, that's the character you expect him to play for some reason. So I don't know if that's from this or just that's the kind of character
he's always so plays. He's got that hate.
Face.
He does.
Yeah, he's kind of skeezy.
Harvey Firestein was Marty Gilbert, the you know, his production, David's production... guy,
the guy that sounded he did not like make he it smoked.
Yeah, that voice.
Oh, Harvey Firestein always sounds like that. Oh,
okay, I don't think I've ever seen him in anything else, but he Mrs. sounds Doubtfire? Like he smoked. I have seen that. Okay,
yeah.
he. Oh, David.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy. Gotcha. Yes. Okay. So he always sounds like he smokes a pack a day.
That's
gotcha.
Harvey Firestein.
Yes. Okay.
Let's see. Do I have him? I think I've got him. Where was he? Where was he talking about?
He was mostly early movie, but that's for reasons.
Oh, yeah. Here it is.
Squashed. I felt so.
It's like in chess. First, you strategically position your pieces. Then when the timing's right, you strike. See? They're positioning themselves all over the world, using this one signal to synchronize their efforts. In approximately 6 hours, the signal's going to disappear and the countdown's going to be over.
And then what?
Checkmate.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
That's him.
The pacing and the talking there kind of sounded like a sex scene.
I don't know what kind of pornography you've been into, but that music in the background was not entirely conducive.
The pacing and the talking, though.
She was talking about the vocalization.
Yep.
Change the background music, and it's a totally different scene.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
The next line
First
he had in
they
that
position their pieces.
The next line he had in that it catches, he said, like, I got to call my lawyer. Oh, forget the lawyer.
Forget about my lawyer.
He actually didn't use the word forget originally.
I can see that.
That sounds like.
Yeah. They had to cut it out and change it because they were trying to make sure they got that PG-13 rating.
Like, yeah, back then you couldn't drop an F-bomb and still get a PG-13 rating.
I'm not sure. In 96, I think you could do one, but I didn't see one.
I don't think they would have given it to him.
I didn't notice one anywhere else, so they might have just been cautious at the time.
I was going to say, I can't remember a PG-13.
And if you only get one, you got to make it a good one, right?
That would have been a good one.
You got to make it Wolverine in the cafe when they drop by.
That's very true.
Exactly. You know, that's my best example.
Brent Spiner was still in here, too.
Brent Spiner, Dr. Oaken. Interestingly enough, I loved this bit of trivia. The character of Dr. Oaken in this was based on Jeffrey Oaken, the digital effects supervisor on Stargate. It's an almost perfect representation of Oaken right down to the hair and the mannerisms, which means that somebody said, this is the guy you're playing. Brent, I want you to go hang out with him for a while. And oh my God, was it exciting to see Doctor? Was exciting to see Data at the time. Wow, to how much that doesn't matter now.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, what else has Brent done over the years that matters? I mean, Data. It's all Data.
1776.
What?
He said that matters.
1776? What, is it like on Broadway or something?
Yeah.
Well, we're talking movies here, dude. You got to work
with it. But it mattered, and he was John Adams, and it was amazing.
He was John Adams in 1770. I can see that. Oh, I can see it. Oh.
I can totally see that.
Sit down, John. Jeez.
Uh-huh.
All right.
It was so good.
Vivica Fox, the other one. Vivica A. Fox played Jasmine. And she was already pretty busy on TV and stuff, recognizable. But she's done a ton of roles, too.
The stripper with the heart of gold.
I like her. She was a good foil for Will. They had good chemistry, I thought.
I thought you for a moment were going to say she was a good foil for the first lady, and I was like, I liked that scene.
That too. I mean, they really did.
They worked well together.
And the writing was just good. So a $75 million budget, like I said, opening weekend, they made $50.2 million right off the top. $306 million U.S. gross, $817 million cumulative worldwide gross. At the time, this film grossed $817 million worldwide, became the highest grossing movie of the year and the second highest grossing movie in film history at the time, behind only Jurassic Park. So at that point, Emmerich even said that Spielberg invited them to the set for Jurassic Park 2, him and Devlin. And the first thing he says to Dean and him is, you guys reinvented the blockbuster. After this movie, nobody can do a normal blockbuster anymore. High praise from Mr. Spielberg.
I'd say.
That also means that at one point in history, Jeff Goldblum had the two highest box office movies of all time.
That's true.
Wow.
And more of a lead in this one, I think, than in Jurassic Park, obviously. But although he was the lead in Jurassic Park 2, which this, you never know, the success of this movie may have ended up kind of bolstering that casting decision for Spielberg.
So. I do want to make a comment on Vivica Fox before we get too far off of that. I feel like they only made her an exotic dancer so they could put her in that costume for the 2 minutes she was in it.
She did look good in it. But, I mean, she was also, was she a model? I mean, I don't remember what her starting spiel was, but she'd made a lot of her career off her body too. So
yeah.
I still love the fact that as tropey as the whole story build is, because that's how this movie had to be, the characters all had more realistic backgrounds to me. I mean, the people, it is America. We're a juxtaposition of different lifestyles and things coming together. And her being an exotic dancer was just an extension of that. This thing happens. These people come together to save the world. These are real people doing real things.
And that works because part of the core theme in the movie is unity in the face of adversity, mankind coming together. All the BS about, you know, that mankind has had to strive to get there aside, you know, it's not important anymore. Now we are one people dealing with this inimitable threat. So I feel like it's pretty strong.
And 25 years later, we still haven't figured it out.
Yeah. Right. Well,
I think we've actually lost ground in the interim.
Yeah, that's
probably
true. True too.
Of course,
so many comments we all know I could
whose
make.
Fault that is.
So that's not that podcast.
Not that podcast.
Yeah, that's why I'm not going any deeper.
The political message was strong, but not everything. I thought this was interesting. According to the producer and co-writer, Dean Devlin, U.S. military had agreed to support the film by allowing the crew to film at military bases, consulting the actors who have military roles, etc. However, after learning of the Area 51 reference in the script, they withdrew their support.
I can see that.
But that's a little kind of on the nose, isn't it? Especially in the 90s. We're talking the era of the X-Files. You know, in fact, they even make a reference to X-Files in the movie.
Actually, I remember reading somewhere at one point that the military has done that on more than one movie. I just can't remember what the other one was. Independence Day was definitely at the top of that list.
That's funny. I mean, it owes a lot to the hype, the alien kind of, you know, mythology of the time. Kind of the post, what's his name, Whitney's books, the Communion, you know, with the Greys, and kind of the whole X-Files era was very kind of soaked in a lot of that mythology. And we were very into it. And at the same time, that era was very much steeped in ideas of, you know, we were taking kind of the can't trust the government to a new level and a lot of conspiracies, and conspiracy theories were a huge part of entertainment. I mean, they still are in some places, but back then, I mean, they were, I think because it was the kind of the pre-internet age, they had a lot more groundwork behind them.
I can see that.
Because anytime you presented like a story that was focused on conspiracy, you could, you know, pretty much expect to, you could generally expect them to have a lot to back it up in the story, at least as far as the story mattered.
Right.
And it would go with that. The other thing about the timing there is that the huge hype that the film began generating in the early 96 caused Warner Brothers to postpone the release of Mars Attacks, which came out later in the year, around Christmas time instead of the summer. And Spielberg temporarily canceled his plans to direct War of the Worlds, which then came out 9 years later, one with Tom Cruise.
I love Mars Attacks.
Yeah, I was going to say I love it for a completely different reason.
Completely different.
That's probably one that we would all have fun. It's not a good one for
it's
the
a
show,
terrible movie.
It's a terrible movie.
I do have to say,
grab the popcorn.
I didn't realize they came out that close together and were manufactured at about the same time. I thought it was an ID4 send-up.
It has some of that feel, doesn't it?
It feels like a send-up. I didn't realize that they were concurrent.
I just have to say, I cannot get behind Mars Attacks. That woman's head would never have fit on that chihuahua.
It didn't fit in the movie. Just saying.
That is true. Spanish television advertises for the movie.
Okay, you have me on that one.
Spanish television ads for the movie showing the large ships hovering over New York City were mistaken by some Spaniards for real disaster news footage. Much like War of the Worlds radio play that Orson Welles did back in the, when it was the 30s, 40s, 30s.
Oops. Oh, man. I did a whole thing on that. It was amazing.
Remember we used to play that on the radio station back in Dodge? I had the radio play on CD, and I would play it on like Halloween or something. Again. Like it was funny to kind of listen back and relive that. Well, I do think the movie sets a lot of standards for the time. I don't know necessarily that that they were doing a lot that was new. They were just kind of doing what was being done already really well. If that makes sense.
That was kind of where I got on it too, because at the time I watched it several times, and then I'd seen too much Will Smith at a certain point. I think Wild Wild West was the one that did me in.
I love that movie.
It almost did Will Smith in.
So I hadn't seen this movie in over 10 years. It was interesting to rewatch it.
I want to point out that Vanessa just said, I love that movie, The Wild Wild West, which means it definitely has to be on our list.
Oh, God. I mean, okay.
Mostly because I want to play Kenneth Branagh clips for half an hour. So funny.
I just found myself thinking we need an anti-kazoo.
I might be sick that day.
Oh, that might be sick that day. Dude, you can't. There's a spider in the third act. Kevin Smith.
Oh my God.
I thought this was kind of cool. Devlin said that most of the dialogue in the scenes that Jeff Goldblum shared with Judd Hirsch and with Will Smith was improvised.
I totally get that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it really, Judd Hirsch especially, a lot of it feels that way. It feels very kind of, you know.
It feels very natural, though.
Judd, try something. You know, it's like that. But I feel like it kind of surprised me a little bit with the Will Smith Jeff Goldblum interplay. Maybe that's just a Jeff thing. Maybe that's what you have
actually.
To do
I totally see the oops, no, that away being improvised. Yeah. That. Oh, sorry, somebody put it on upside down, and I can see that scene being taken place, and then them going, oh shit, now we have to film that.
Wild Wild West is on our list. Just saying.
I hear you. I see what you're saying. Well, July, we're focusing on like alien invasion stuff, so yeah, we'll get to it. Wild Wild West doesn't quite fit the bill.
It does have a spider.
Although it does have the bill. Will does have a spider. The scene in which Will Smith drags the unconscious alien across the desert was filmed on the salt flats near Great Salt Lake in Utah. Yeah,
I recognized it. I've been there.
Smith's line.
And I could have been at a barbecue.
Not that line. Not that line. Where is it? It's the "what the hell is that smell" was unscripted. The Great Salt Lake is home to a brine shrimp, you know, tiny crustaceans.
Yep.
That when they die, the bodies sink to the bottom of the lake, which isn't very deep, and they decompose. And so when the wind kicks up just right, the bottom mud is disturbed, and the smell of millions of decaying brine shrimp can be very, very
wafts across the plain.
Bad. And apparently nobody warned Will.
It led to some really good dialogue, and it went well.
That I love that bit. Let's see.
This was supposed to be my weekend off. I knew. You got me out here dragging your heavy ass through the burning desert with your dreadlocks sticking out the back of my parachute. You gotta come down here with an attitude, hacking all big and bad. And what the hell is that smell? I could have been at a barbecue.
That's the 4th of July. I loved it. And I feel that that was the scene you feel that they hired Will Smith for at that moment. It's like,
yes.
Oh, he is being so much him right here. Perfect. I don't think I have a whole lot of other trivia. I read a lot of stuff about the effects work because, like I said, a lot of us, almost all of us, practical. It was during that period when digital effects were just taking off. Really, Jurassic Park set a lot of new groundwork for that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, ILM kind of invented the stuff they were using for Jurassic Park while they were making Jurassic Park. I remember I watched a documentary about it where Spielberg kind of switched gears halfway through the movie. So, like, a lot of stuff in Jurassic Park, like a lot of the close-ups of the T-Rex and stuff, especially all animatronic. But the freaking, like, the Gallimimus herd, stuff like that, all that was digital. You know, it was all brand new digital stuff and was beautiful. But this movie still had a lot. I mean, it had a ton of miniatures. It actually holds the record for the most miniature model work to appear in one film.
I mean, there were a lot of exploding cities.
And there's estimates that more miniatures were used in this film than in any other two films combined. And due to the advances in digital technology since then, most experts believe that this record may stand forever. Because
I could see that.
He's done it since. They had like a 1/12 scale model of the White House for that explosion. And they filmed it from like – I read about it. They filmed it for like 9 or 12 different cameras at different speeds, right?
Yeah.
And then they would speed it up to like a real time when they were like showing it so they'd make it look like the explosion was moving slower. And it's just such – and it's iconic. You know, it's like the most iconic shot from the movie is that the White House. Good stuff. President Whitmore was originally intended to be a Richard Nixon-like figure. I thought this was interesting. The role was originally written for – I didn't know if I want to talk about this – Kevin Spacey. Who was Dean Devlin's friend from high school. An executive at Fox refused to cast Spacey, insisting he didn't have the potential to be a big star. The part was rewritten for Bill Pullman. Ironically, Spacey would later become a much bigger star and was cast as an alien in K-Pax, 2001, and as the president of the United States in House of Cards. Spoilers.
I forgot about K-Pax.
Yeah, that's
I've still never seen it.
It was good.
Ooh. I've seen it, but it's been a long time, and I didn't enjoy it.
I couldn't bring myself to Kazoo the Kid. I wanted to, but fortunately I had Jason as my conscience right then. So there you go.
You're a great Kazoo man.
I'm gonna get this out of the way.
You're gonna play for school, Jimmy, really?
Let's see. Clip one.
Go ahead. Our intelligence tells us the object has settled into a stationary orbit.
Wow, that's good news.
Not really, sir. Part of it is broken off into nearly 36 other pieces. Smaller than the whole, sir. Yet over 15 miles in width themselves.
Where are they heading?
They should be entering our atmosphere within the next 25 minutes.
That was kind of the setup, right? So,
how did that sneak up on us?
Which part?
The whole thing.
The ship.
The ship.
How did the ship sneak up on us?
Well, it was coming from behind the moon.
Yeah, and in the 90s, SETI was just kind of a thing. You know,
sorry, that really expression made the statement totally worth it.
We don't see a lot coming at us, actually. And
there's people with telescopes pointed to the sky all the time.
Was it in Armageddon? But
they don't know what you're looking for.
They said we have enough to track like 10% of the sky. And begging your pardon, sir.
I'm talking about tracking. I'm talking about somebody noticing that there's a big thing heading.
You're not going to see it.
It was lit up.
Probably not while they were flying here.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a good question.
And any lighting on the ship was probably for Hollywood because it's not like the ship needed it.
And in a cosmic sense, it wasn't that big. I mean,
it was. Is Armageddon on our list?
You know. Oh.
It's smaller than the moon.
Gosh, it probably should be. That's one of Michael Bay's best films? Question mark? I mean,
kind of Steve Buscemi in it, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
I've seen
that. Yeah.
One.
Oh, the weasel guy.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
The weasel guy.
I love him.
God. And then, yeah, Armageddon would be a good one. Let's see. Not even a four-pointer. Oh, yeah, kind of setting some tone here, introducing our characters.
Mommy, look it!
It's too early, baby.
It's an earthquake.
Not even a four-pointer. Go back to sleep.
Because that's the way we rolled in California.
And Wichita now.
No, to be fair, yeah, we were having 3.9.
I don't think we had a 4-pointer in Wichita, have we?
We were having 3.9s, and my best friend who now lives in San Francisco said, yeah, I don't even bother getting up for anything more or less than a 4.0.
Wow.
I'm like, oh.
I loved some of the news clips. I think it's interesting. They hired a whole bunch of actors to play newscasters because they had like a whole bunch of fake newscasts going on in the background and a lot of shots and everything. But all of the actual dialogue, they ended up having to hire real newscasters to do because they didn't feel like any of the actors came off as
newscasters.
Yeah, as believable enough, you know, genuine enough. So here's like the news.
Once again, the LAPD is asking Los Angeles not to fire their guns at the visitor spacecraft. You may inadvertently trigger an interstellar war.
I like that one.
Inadvertently.
Look-a-like-a.
If I knew I was going to meet the president, I would have worn a tie. I mean, look at me. I look like a schlemiel.
You're fine.
Oh, my God.
David, I don't know how happy he's going to be to see you.
Yeah, that's right. I'm telling you, we're wasting time. He's not going to listen to me. We should go.
Why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he listen?
Because last time I saw him, we got into a fight.
You walked in the room and punched him in the head.
You punched the president?
No, he wasn't the president then. I punched him, he fought back, we wrestled around, it was a fight.
A fight that you started, because David thought that I was having an affair.
With the president?
Such a Jewish just exchange.
Very, very nebbish. I love the so dialogue much. In those scenes. And again, just character establishing stuff.
What actually is a schlemiel?
A schlemiel, I have no idea. That's why they look like a schlemiel. I don't know, but it's a great line. And, you know, I mean, do you have any idea, Rich? You seem to be more worldly about these things.
I don't
know
if I could verbalize it right now because I don't have a good definition. But
context is lacking. I think Jason's gone to the phone, so let's see if we can call Schlemiel.
Armageddon is on the list.
You guys remember the welcome?
A stupid, awkward, or unlucky person.
Oh. That'd be a way of putting it out.
That's a really nice way to sum all that up. But the funny thing is, I feel like if I was using the word, I don't know if it would come off naturally. So you know,
really, because you usually are one.
I'm a schlemiel. That's nice to know. You're fired. welcome wagon. Put it in hover.
Put her in hover, Barf. Put her in hover.
You guys remember that scene? Let's see.
I was trying to figure out where in a pilot. This movie that came.
It had
from.
So many throwback lines. So many throwback lines to other things. One of the ones I liked was where they're trying to escape the nuclear blast in the ship at the end, and Jeff Goldblum was like, "Go faster!" The same thing he said when they're outrunning the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. You know, just little things like that. See, as the good river, I played that at the beginning. I can't make myself play it again. It's such a sad clip.
Yeah, because only one person
they all
lives.
Died.
The Black Knights were not victorious.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to skip that one. You did not, well, you know.
Oh, no, you did not shoot that green shit at me.
It just had to be in there.
Probably the single most iconic line in the movie.
Not the line that I remember in this movie.
So in the first, I like the way they kind of broke it up for us in the acts, right? July 2nd, July 3rd, July 4th.
Okay, then I have to talk about that because July 2nd didn't need to happen.
Didn't need to happen at all?
Oh,
it was
God.
The day that it started, right? Or was it, did they have a July 1st?
It was July 2nd. It was all July 2nd. 50 minutes and 51 seconds of July 2nd.
So this movie could have been an hour shorter. I'm on board.
Establishing, but yeah, it could have been.
It was so much prologue.
it starts with them finding the ship, right? With it showing up.
Over a third of the movie was established.
And then giving us our characters.
Hey, 20 minutes of the movie was shadows creeping across landscapes. I mean,
which now you got to put yourself back in that moment too, when you haven't seen this the first time and you don't understand what's going on. And those effects, when those ships are coming into the atmosphere and people are reacting the way they are, is really dramatic.
It builds the gravitas.
Yeah. I guess, but in a theater, it works because you're trapped and you can't get away and they can put an hour of sludge at the front of the movie.
Sludge.
But when you're sitting at home and you could go somewhere else, it's really hard to get through July 2nd.
Anyway, they did break up the acts rather nice. I don't know if I would say that, even though you just pointed out how long that opening montage was, that the switch to July 3rd was really a strong end of Act 1 kind of moment. But it had a point where we had started and seen the disaster, and now we breathe. And then that's where they were doing the recovery from people climbing out of wreckage, things like that. I mean, it was like the after that for yeah. So it was kind of a weak transition in that regard. It was strong in terms of the narrative sense because it was a good place to they build, stop. It was a good place to stop and then reset a little bit. But I would say Act 2 really probably starts with, what would you say?
Area 51.
Yeah. And that's kind of an important kind of distinction because it's probably a good hour and a half into the movie.
So right?
Act 1, entre-act, Act 2.
And then, this was kind of, I think, that point, right?
No, you had the spaceship and you had the bodies. They were all locked up in a bunker. Where was that? David.
I don't know.
Area 51, right? Area 51. You knew then. And you did nothing.
Sir, regardless of what you may have read in the tabloids, there have never been any spacecraft recovered by our government. Take my word for it. There's no Area 51. There's no recovered spaceship.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. President. That's not entirely accurate.
I feel like they had to have a scene to, like, justify his existence in the script.
Plausible deniability was the reason for his existence.
Yeah.
My biggest problem with him is he was the one that was so gung-ho for the nukes. Mm-hmm. Any method, any option, any blow-up, boom, he just got so excited. And then when a plan was come up with that still involved nukes that might actually work, he got so defensive. You know,
it wasn't his plan.
You can't do this. This is the stupidest plan ever. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, is he just here to be critical?
Yes.
I mean,
which is an important sounding board element in a narrative. I think somebody to challenge the ideas. It doesn't have to be that annoying, but somebody to challenge the ideas so that you, as the viewer,
want
to
punch him.
Take away from the idea its validity. Now, the interesting thing is that the biggest criticism of this movie that I remember was, oh, we're just going to upload a computer virus to an alien computer system because we're assuming everything works on the same basis.
With a Macintosh. Crazy.
Yeah, with a Mac.
Well, yeah, it has to be a Mac. I don't think alien ships are PC compatible.
And that was the point, right? I mean, the entire idea that we are making an assumption that the language of alien intelligence and technology is the same mathematical route that we use for ours.
And that's why character isn't believable for me. His entire reason for the movie, like, I don't
David?
Get it. David.
I don't want to be an apologist in this particular case because I don't think the movie needs it. It was extremely successful.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a really fun movie to watch, in my opinion. Did you enjoy the movie?
Yeah.
Okay. And did anybody not enjoy Independence Day? I mean, it's not like anybody
I've seen the movie
seen
a bunch of times.
Yeah. You know, so it's one of those details that people go on about how unrealistic it is, but it doesn't ruin the movie.
No.
It just kind of stains it.
There are a few things that stains it. We'll get to that.
That's not the only stain.
I also feel like the apologist perspective on that is the fact that David didn't discover or didn't decide that they had a compatible technology. he discovered that they had a compatible technology.
And that's the only way that it is even slightly believable.
It's also the only thing that makes sense. I don't ever see why viewers... this bugs me a lot of times when viewers do this. It's like, this doesn't make sense because they don't explain this thing sufficiently. I'm like, well, they don't have to because the narrative doesn't require it. The narrative just requires that we get to that point and move past it for the action. You know,
so long
you want
to
them
get
to
there.
You want them to come up with some excuse to explain why this would work. Well, what we're doing is asking you to accept that we that the characters discover that this works.
They spent 2.5 hours explaining everything else.
That's fair.
No, there were 20 minutes of shadows creeping across landscapes.
Okay, right. 2 hours. They spent 2 hours explaining everything else.
Let's see. I do have just a little bit of Brent Spiner here.
Now there is much we can learn from each other if we can negotiate a truce. We can find a way to coexist. Can there be a peace between us?
Peace. No peace.
What is it you want us to do?
Yeah.
How was that supposed to work? Like, was he like pushing on vocal cords? Yeah. Or
you can see the tentacles kind of wrapping around the throat, like manipulating it. So that's what you're getting out of that, I think.
Oh,
that
was supposed to be vibrating the vocal cords.
Okay.
That was one of the things that gave away the practical effects, because there was a point where the tentacle slipped in a way that would have been completely unconvincing for an actual organic tendril.
Oh, that's not something I noticed.
I caught great. It the first time I watched the movie, and it's jarred me every time since.
The first time I watched the movie, that scene is the one that made me never want to see the movie again, because it freaked me out.
It was
out.
Freaky. It was intense. And it was well-placed in terms of the narrative, because it was also kind of – it was early in the movie, you have all this buildup, right? All this tension is building up to the moment when they blast the buildings. I mean, that's really kind of the climax of the first act. So you get to this point where you know it's happening. You know it's coming. In fact, they lay out for you that it's coming because David's figured out that there's a countdown and we're going on. But we're trying to tell the president all this stuff. We know something's going to happen because we've all seen the poster with the White House being blown up. We all know. But you get into the second act and they drop this into the middle in a way that just kind of like, oh, it just disrupts everything. You know, it doesn't reroute the movie in any way, but it's kind of like out of the blue. We're just kind of dropping this into the middle of what's going on and making a case for why for the entire point of this. This is our exposition moment. This is the point at which we say, oh, the aliens are here to do blank. And it turns out that's something we don't want them to do.
And to guide us to not have empathy for the aliens at all.
Precisely.
There's absolutely no way they're going to work with us.
No ambiguity.
They have to be destroyed.
No ambiguity at all.
Pretty sure that when the first thing they do is blow up a bunch of stuff, you're not going to be able to reason with them.
It does seem like they're not looking for the opportunity to talk.
Yeah, but there could still be... I could make arguments that there was some kind of miscommunication. They didn't realize we were intelligent. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Something that could make... They're not that bad.
No.
They're,
we flew up a helicopter with little light panels on it to try and talk to them. We were...
And they blew it up.
And they saw it as some kind of threat.
Throw me the lights. You wake me up and put lights like that in my face, I'm going to punch you too.
Hey.
The matter of scale there actually kind of bugs me, because this was a 15-mile diameter spaceship, and that was a Sikorsky. It's smaller than a mosquito to a human, comparatively speaking. So, and I realize mosquitoes get swatted.
Very tiny
gnats,
lights.
Gnats usually don't.
I don't know. If a gnat gets in my face, I will bat at it.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Just saying.
Even without realizing what it is, there's just... the idea of something there.
And if something's flashing lights in front of me, even if it's the size of a gnat, I am going to be pissed and flash more.
Are you even going to notice it's flashing lights at you if it's the size of a gnat? I mean...
So that is the moment, you know, where you get... No, there's no redemption here.
There's no redemptive art for the aliens.
Irredeemable enemy.
There's barely a story for the aliens.
We can blow them all up and it's okay.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has a better reason to destroy the planet.
making way for a space bypass.
Exactly.
Yeah, these guys are like locusts.
Them Vogons. They're just kooky that way.
Yeah, you think that, and then they start reciting poetry at you.
Oh, no. We're moving on. in case you have any memorized.
But I know why.
David lays it down. Here's what we were talking about.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. Just how exactly do we infect the mothership with this virus?
We're going to have to fly their alien craft out of our atmosphere and dock with it. We can enter here, as shown in the satellite photos. We then upload the virus. We then set off some kind of explosion, which will disable it, and that'll disorient the smaller ships below, and that could buy it, I think, at least some time to take them out, take them down, do your stuff.
Do your stuff. That was the whole kind of the point moving into Act 3.
And we have a plan.
I like the straightforward narrative. I mean, I really do, especially when you have so many characters that are kind of spinning around it,
yes,
making sure it continues to work. Let's see. Looking for some what?
Well, I'm Russell K. Sir. And after Nam, I got into crop dusting, and been doing that ever since. On a personal note, sir, I'd just like to add that ever since I was kidnapped by aliens 10 years ago, I've been dying for some payback, and I just want you to know that I won't let you down.
Richard, you're doing a fantastic Randy Quaid over there.
Yeah. That's definitely the Quaid.
Just not going to let you down. Mm-hmm. And of course, the line that Jason loved.
Oops. Oops. What's that mean? What do you mean?
No, I got it. Look, some jerk didn't put...
I know what I had it, mean. When fine. I say oops, what do you mean saying oops there?
Well, you say we try that one again, huh?
Yes, yes. Yes, without the oops.
Without the oops.
That way.
I do like the sounds of the ships. I thought they were really cool. You gotta wonder where, you know, it's like what dinosaur they took that from and modified it to make it that sound.
I can't remember what sound it was, but at some point they used the sound of a dozen screaming cats.
I don't doubt it.
And it absolutely freaked my cat out when they did it. It was an explosion or one of the alien screams or something, but there was... In my head, it was very obviously cats, and in my cat's head, it was very obviously cats, because she was laying there all chill, and then all of a sudden, she was on all four legs with her hunch.
Science fiction sound design has to be one of the most interesting jobs, just trying to come up with ways to create sounds that nobody's actually heard through typically combinations of other sounds and digital effects. And, I mean, you know, it's all downhill since the TIE Fighter, but, I mean, there's definitely a lot to be said for great spoofy sounds in an alien flick.
Agreed.
Good job. All I have left is the title track. So a little bit longer clip, but it's obviously the one that matters.
Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live, to exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
So good. Maybe the best motivational speech in any movie ever.
Second best.
Okay.
Braveheart.
Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Oh, jeez. That one has got to be on our list.
It should be.
I think it is.
Dude, I really, that's a, man, we've had a lot of kazoos this episode. Most of them, Jason. But I really feel like that was, it's a powerful sort of example of, you know, movie making magic, of course. But Bill Pullman was really great in that role. And I felt that was kind of the shining moment. Interestingly enough, that last line, Independence Day, wasn't originally in the script. They wanted to call the movie Independence Day, but they didn't own the rights to it. Somebody else, some other company like Warner Brothers or somebody, had the rights to use Independence Day as a title. So in order to do it, they had to demonstrate that it was relevant enough to the film. That's why it was called ID4. Why we heard that a lot, you know, as kind of the code, because that was the working title of the film up until marketing started. So that was neat. So a little bit of nothing.
I don't think the title should have been Independence Day. I mean, sure, it's shticky for July 4th, but at the same time, we weren't ever dependent on the aliens, so we weren't becoming independent from them.
A valid point, and one that actually I've had a few times.
You stay out of my Kool-Aid, okay?
It's okay. I got your back, Vanessa. We're good on this one. There.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. Rich, what do you got
for us? My thumbs down, and it's gonna be the length of the movie. It was just too long. I think I would enjoy it more if I could sit down and watch it in an hour and a half or 2 hours and enjoy it. I get where they're at. Maybe it's fun. I think I saw something about an extended cut, and I'm like, for the love of goodness, why?
It's another 40 minutes of shadows.
That's probably what it is.
It's not that much longer. I actually watched the extended cut.
And but on my thumbs up, I love how they drew, as tropey as everything was, the character pool seemed more down to earth, seemed more American cross-section than most disasters-type movies, alien-type invasion movies are. And I really enjoyed the way the characters played with each other, and that makes the movie watchable, and it's been over 10 years since I've seen it. I did enjoy the rewatch, even though I didn't think I was going to, because at that point, you know, still wore out on Will Smith quite a bit, and I just can't get back into a lot of this. But it works. Overall, the film is fun to watch. If it weren't for the time, I'd be like, yeah, I should watch this every year. And maybe if you watch movies in the background and that's what you do, that's probably not a bad thing to do for an annual thing. But I'm going to say it's a good movie, rewatchable. And if I had, I may within 3 years maybe watch it again instead of waiting over 10. So I'm going to go with 3.5 stars.
Nice. Okay. I will say that there was a period when I did watch this every year around the 4th. I happen to have it on disc. And
people just do that.
Yeah.
My mother does that.
I do a Die Hard at Christmas time. That's about the only other movie I do. And even then, eventually, I got to where I was rotating Die Hards, even though some of them didn't have anything to do with Christmas.
Right. Whatever, you know. I can deal with Die Hard. I don't like A Christmas Story, but I can deal with Die Hard.
Nobody likes this Christmas story.
I don't. There are people who
wish
do.
That were true.
No, they're me fake. Too. They're not people. They're not. They're aliens in disguise, clearly.
That's
they're
the thing. People. This is the Christmas story. To me, this movie's always been the Christmas story for Independence Day.
There you go. Well, wait a minute.
There's so much to unpack in that story.
Yeah, that's a little rough. I can say I as a disaster film, which is the framework, or is the blueprint for it. As a disaster film, it plays differently than as like a sci-fi invasion flick.
Right.
And I mean, I guess Robert Loggia, there's a story about him being told by Dean Devlin that when he was trying to get a feel for what kind of film they were making, Devlin meant to tell him, go watch Airport, which came out like 74. But he accidentally said, go watch Airplane.
That's funny.
And Robert Loggia then wouldn't come out of his trailer for like a day or two because he thought he had signed up for a spoof and was really upset.
But no, yeah, the whole plot line plays like a disaster movie more than an alien invasion.
Yeah, I like that. It works that way. I think that gets old, you know, but it's a blueprint that's strong. People like it because of the narrative. Movies. And effects have gotten to the point where they could do so much with it. I mean, Man of Steel was a fantastic disaster.
One of my favorite spoof movies is Disaster Movie. So,
let's see. Vanessa, what do you think?
I think the movie was an hour too long.
I'm hearing that a lot now.
Thumbs up. The practical effects were good. I appreciated the practical effects. The story, for the part of it that I was paying attention and could make sense of it, it was great. Thumbs down. The planes were bad. The planes were so bad.
I did not ever remember noticing that at the time. So I think that's because that technology was so new.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible, but like they don't even fly in a believable way, like remotely watching it now. It's so bad. The aliens are interesting, and it seems like a weird way to portray aliens because it's what, supposed to be like a biomechanical suit they're in? Or something like that.
I grew up on Doctor Who. Those were way more believable than anything I was exposed to growing up.
So much good trivia out there. I came across something on the aliens too. The designer, the creature designer that they worked with, gave them two pitches for aliens. And Emmerich liked them both. So they used both. One was the bio suit version, and one was the alien on the inside. And so I thought it was kind of nice. A neat way to kind of use that. You know, somebody comes at you with a bunch of great material, just screw it, we'll use it all.
I get that, but they had just enough differences in the way that they looked that they didn't even really look like the same species, so it kind of threw me out a bit. That being said, my overall rating is like 2.5.
Oh my god!
Wow. But yeah, no, Daleks are completely different on the outside and the inside. It's just this little itty-bitty crab creature, so...
Yeah, Jason is laughing. Jason is laughing. This on the is going to be good. Trash cans.
Please, sir, tell me why.
Is he going to rate this a 5?
I think he's going to rate it higher than Vanessa. That's what I'm curious to see. Jason, go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to say something that Vanessa usually says and didn't. I was going to let her have it, but she didn't. Unnecessary relationships.
True. True.
We could have shaved at least 20 or 30 minutes off of the movie if we had gotten rid of the First Lady and Vivica A. Fox. We didn't need that. It was extra.
We didn't need the redemption between the husband and wife, really. Like, yeah. They needed to have some sort of connection. They didn't need a redemption.
That's fair, but I liked that. I liked the tension what it did for David, and it's part of the payoff on his character.
The little wedding bit didn't need to happen. Everybody holding hands and singing Kumbaya, it was unnecessary. And in a movie that was already too long, that made it seem that much longer.
It's okay. I already had enough other problems with the movie that didn't even hit the radar. It makes sense, though.
The explosions were pretty. Thumbs up. The explosions were so pretty. I loved watching the matchstick buildings go boom. And, you know, the Empire State Building's my personal favorite. Everybody talks about the White House, but the Empire State Building was such a good boom.
And
those great shots on the miniatures where they would take them down the streets and stuff. So you have like those narrow openings of the explosions winding down and stuff flying around. Really cool.
In my brain, I kept watching that scene and putting it together with Twin Towers footage from
9/11. Oh, wow.
And there was some similarities.
Oof. Oh. Oof.
Yeah. No, that got me.
Okay. Yeah. Oh.
Recover. Recover. It's all right.
Sorry.
Coming back. Judd Hirsch was incredible in this movie.
So that's the only reason it got the rating it did.
he was a thumbs up. He is definitely the MVC, and love him. I love Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
I tried to call him Malcolm for a second, then I wanted to say Malcolm McDowell, and I was like, no.
You're going completely the wrong direction here.
Jeff Goldblum is not Malcolm McDowell.
He was a very different person.
He was Malcolm in another movie.
And he was Malcolm.
And we do have a Medal on this, but
yeah.
It's not his fault. Someone put the direction
the label upside down.
Oops. That away. But yeah, he was so good in this. And there were a lot of good characters, and there was a lot of good character development. But there was too much good character development, and that's my biggest problem with the movie, is it was just, it took too long to get where it was going, and when it got there, it was a lot of fun, and it was great, and I think there was more fun than slog, and at the end of the day, I give it 3 stars, and the next time I watch it, I'll start it an hour in.
True.
Wow, I'm fascinated by where this is going. Kid?
I had no confidence that we would get this far without anyone saying my biggest nitpick with the movie. I'm amazed. Thumbs down. This movie is 2 hours and 30 plus minutes of American masturbatory fantasy.
It is.
And it is so blatant.
It's even called Independence Day.
It is so blatant that I physically cringe every time I get to that part in the movie where the one Brit's like, oh, the Americans have a plan. And the other guy's like, it's about bloody time.
Watch it.
Because everyone else in the world is sitting around waiting for America to save the world. Because that's what would happen. because that's what Americans think would happen.
I forgot I was going to say something about that. Next time I do need to bring notes to the studio.
There you go.
And it bugs the hell out of me. I can't believe this movie was successful overseas, unless it's because they're laughing at us.
It wouldn't be the first time.
I know.
And it won't be the last.
I know.
You know, if they remade the movie nowadays, the aliens would just turn around and leave after the 800th call about their extended warranty.
We do only show us blowing up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So overseas, they get to watch us blow up a lot.
I guess that's a very good point. I mean, the White House, yeah.
I mean, at least, I mean, even Michael Bay went ahead and destroyed Paris in Armageddon. I mean,
somebody had to.
They didn't go anywhere.
They had it coming.
I love Paris, sorry.
But yeah, that is my single biggest complaint about the movie, but it is far from my only complaint about the movie. However, I am going to skip most of the rest of that because A, it's been covered by other people, and B, I can only say 20 minutes of shadows creeping across the landscape so many times before people get my point.
20 minutes of shadows creeping across the landscape?
20 minutes of talking about 20 minutes of shadows creeping across the landscape.
And now it's almost 20 minutes of our show.
They deserved it. All of that being said, thumbs up. This movie is incredible, and I absolutely love it. The acting is, of course, top-notch, and that's been hit on for almost every actor in the movie that I really felt it deserved, except for...
He's going to say the dog.
No, okay. No, I was going to bring Boomer. Up the dog.
This is a kid. I just was trying to, trying to get out of hand.
Mini Keanu Reeves. What the heck is his name?
Oh!
We didn't mention him.
Mini Generic Keanu Reeves? I forgot about Mini Generic Keanu Reeves.
Him.
What are we talking about?
He played Randy Quaid's son.
Randy Quaid's son.
Oh, the kid. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I really enjoyed him, and I don't even know who he is. But
I can't remember his name.
I can't remember the character's name. That's what I was trying to remember. But
Miguel?
Yeah, Miguel. Yeah, Miguel. Thank you. He had a couple of completely irrelevant scenes that were only there presumably to kind of
character.
James Duvall. Yeah.
Yes. And I loved it. Those were huge high points of the movie for me. I really liked it.
They could have cut out every scene he was in, and I would have enjoyed the movie just as much.
I know, and I would have never known they were missing. But
exactly.
Every time
because they were there, I liked them.
No, get into his characterization, I cross over with Mars Attacks again.
But I get that, you know. But I really feel like that's almost an unfair characterization with a lot of movies. Because the story that's being told is the story that's being told. There's always entire sections of a movie you can take out and not damage the movie. They're there to be part of the story.
Well, the only reason that the kids were in there was to give Randy Quaid someone to say I love you to before he killed himself.
And it mattered. Because otherwise his sacrifice wasn't as poignant.
True.
And that sacrifice needed to matter. I absolutely am behind the producers on the director.
How can you say it wouldn't matter? It mattered because he saved the rest of humanity.
But he was such a screw-up, and they wanted to establish that all along. So they needed to give that context.
They definitely established.
He had to be a screw-up, so he had to have a redemptive arc, and now we know that he has orphaned kids that are actually proud of their father instead of thinking that he's a moron that they almost left in prison.
Yeah.
They tried to desert him behind. And now they get to go, we're actually really proud of their dad. Or, no, actually, the exact quote was, I am.
And about that tone.
That was weak. That was such a weak scene.
Well, it was about the most mini Keanu Reeves he got.
That's true. Okay.
But no, I honestly feel that the payoff would have been better if it had been the president who sacrificed himself.
And then it would have been a younger child being deserted.
Well, yeah, who'd already lost their mother. But, you know, would have been the national orphan. We would have made a huge thing out of that.
But at the same time, he was at least leaving one child old enough to take care of the other two.
She was a character in the second movie, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Like, as an
yes.
adult.
They all were.
What was her name? Patricia, I think?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
There's not a second movie.
Yes, there is.
Have you actually
we
seen it?
We have managed not to talk about it at all.
We managed to get through the whole show, yeah.
I thought there was going to be a huge discussion.
I didn't know.
Yeah, I don't care.
Let's say we mentioned it.
Me and Julie went straight out of this, and she rented the second one, and we watched it and fell asleep about three quarters of the way
through. All I want to know is how many creeping shadows are in the second movie.
Only about 15 minutes. Only about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Really, restrained.
It's only one real scene, and it's 15 minutes of us looking at the planet with a shadow creeping across the entire planet.
So, you know, they just kind of consolidated it all. But
I guess given that that it is not the movie we're here to talk about, of course, and that there may be people who haven't gotten out of the way to see it yet, and as much as I would love to warn them, we probably shouldn't get into it too much, especially True. Since Rich hasn't seen it either.
It's a completely different discussion.
Yeah, I cannot recommend enough avoiding that stupid movie, and that's saying something from me.
This is Eric. Y'all yeah. know Eric, right?
Eric loves everything.
Not Independence Day 2.
I got to tell you, though, and I haven't watched it since the theater, my expectations were high. A lot of people's expectations were high. That movie had a lot to live up to. 20 years after the first one, a movie that was as successful and as beloved as Independence Day and recapturing most of the main cast really should have been a better film. You know, really.
I need to rewatch that one. I remember the scientist guy playing a bigger part in it, and I appreciate his character.
How did he play? Okay.
Yeah, because he died in this one. Isn't that weird?
I don't even remember.
He wasn't dead. He was in a coma. That's neither here nor there. I do very much enjoy the sequel. I know you probably find that hard to believe, but I do very much enjoy the
again,
sequel.
I haven't given it a fair shot.
So. I cannot, however, give it as high a rating. Well, actually, I know. I might be able to give
not
it
the high. Movie we're talking about, kid.
Stars.
I would like your stars for this movie.
Okay, so Independence Day, ID4, 4 stars.
Ooh.
All right. Well done, sir.
Big that's my spender. Final word on the matter.
5 stars for me, Rich.
Wow.
This is a freaking favorite. This is a freaking favorite.
That took a weird turn.
There's no chance I wasn't going to give this one 5 stars. I've already seen it enough to know. All right.
All right.
So what's up with us?
Since I'm doing this on my cell phone, I have to scroll a little bit. But it comes up with a total of 3.5 stars, which makes it watchable and slightly recommended.
Nice.
Probably context.
And we slightly recommend it.
There you go.
I'm going to fast forward through so many things next time.
he's starting an hour in.
What's coming up for us next week?
Iron Sky.
Iron Sky.
Ooh, on Amazon
Nazis
Prime.
Nazis on the moon.
I haven't seen it.
Watch it. It's so worth it. We're going to talk about it.
If there are even 5 minutes of shadows creeping across landscapes in that movie,
so
I'm just
thank you very
out.
Much for joining us for Exposition Street, our prismatic film cast. My name is Eric for Rich, for Jason, for Vanessa and the kid. I'm out of here. Everybody have a fantastic week.
Bye.